have no chimney in our house, which all us kids regret.
So on Christmas Eve, we hang our socks on the television set.
Merry Christmas and welcome to The Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. It's the Wednesday, December 18th edition of the podcast. Counting down towards Christmas, we're just a week away now. 1 week from Christmas Day. And a quick reminder, this podcast is taking a couple of weeks off, beginning this weekend. So this Friday will be the last edition of the podcast for 2019. We start 2020 on January 6th. So let's get back together on the 6th of January. Okay? All right. But that is after this Friday, of course. It is a cold day in our neighborhood. All of that stormy weather brought in a chilly, chilly wave of cold after it. And around our house, we had a fire last night, which was quite nice. It was quite nice. And I enjoy that. My basic philosophy is I prefer winter over summer because you can dress up and get warm. You can turn up the heat. You can find a way to get comfortable. In the summertime, there's only so much clothing you can legally take off to get comfortable. So I'll take winter. It is an interesting day in America because today the U.S. House is set to vote to impeach a president. This is only the fourth time it's happened in American history, and it's the first time it's happened without outside counsel, without outside judgment, without following precedent, which has been set the other three times. And quite frankly, it's the first time that it has been done with a complete and total disregard for the Constitution. Oh, yes, The Democrats keep spouting it's constitutional. It's our constitutional obligation. We must obey the Constitution and honor the Constitution. And they have no, absolutely no intent of honoring the Constitution. They have no intent of honoring the traditions of this nation. In fact, the progressives in the Democrat Party, running the Democrat Party today, hate the Constitution. They see it as an impediment to what they want to do in this country. Barack Obama actually said so, and they have no intent of following its guidelines. They will do lip service because they know that the people who are listening to them and agreeing with every word they say are completely ignorant of what our founding fathers actually wrote in that incredible document. And they can play on that ignorance in order to do what they want to do. But we'll talk about that a little bit later after the first break. And as usual, first, we like to talk about things that are a bit on the absurd side. And no, there's nothing absurd in my life right now, except the fact that I think my dog understands every word I say. Which just means I spend too much time around my dog. Way too much time around the dog. But when it comes to the news, here's something absurd. Sacramento, California, a number of restaurants are closing their doors. Why? California is about to institute a minimum wage increase. And some of these institutions, these restaurants which have been there for decades, can't afford the minimum wage. Now, the people on the left will have told you by now, oh, that's ridiculous. All they have to do is raise the price of a burger or a drink a couple of cents, and they can make up for the minimum wage. In fantasy land, maybe, but that doesn't work in the real world. You're talking about businesses which are already running on the edge, usually, as far as finances are concerned. And when you impose, the government imposes law requiring that business to spend more money, then they have to cut somewhere. And we have seen again and again and again across the country, wherever the working or the living wage, I'm air quoting, wherever the living wage is instituted, that restaurants lay people off, they shorten schedules, they change things. Because they can't afford for that much more money to be going out. And thus we see a working illustration of government in America today. January 1, 2020, California's minimum wage will go up to $13 per hour for businesses that employ 26 workers or more, $12 per hour for businesses with fewer workers. By 2023, minimum wage in the state will be mandated at $15 an hour. Several restaurateurs in Sacramento have crunched the numbers on how the increased labor costs will impact their operations, and they've determined they can no longer sustain themselves. KMAX-TV profiled some of their stories in a report this week. Paul Fraga told the KMAX-TV, California is a rough state to do small business. They want everybody to make $20 an hour, but for the smaller guy, I can't afford that. Fraga owned Perry's Restaurant along Highway 99 there, and it's a place that until Sunday served diners for 30 years. One customer who showed up for her last meal at Perry's told KMAX, it's really sad just thinking about this. It's an institution. This is a Sacramento institution. Another Sacramento station, KXTV Television, reported last month that the iconic Fat City Bar in Sacramento's historic downtown decided to shut down after 43 years. Owner Jerry Fat told the station it was purely a business decision. He said, we had a great ride, but due to the steady decline in old Sacramento business, coupled with rising costs and increased competition for those shrinking dollars, we made the decision to close. Phil Curry owns a Greek restaurant called Opa Opa that has operated in Sacramento for 14 years. He told KTXL-TV in November he would close up shop in mid-December and wasn't shy about the fact that the minimum wage hikes were the reason he was throwing in the towel. He said, most of our margins have been consumed by the minimum wage pressures. But the community begged him to stay open for a little longer, and he agreed, saying he wanted to take this through the holidays for my staff, he says. Opa Opa will close December 29th for the last time. Corey told KMAX-TV, we close our doors one by one. Perry's after 50 years. Today, Fat City and others. You'll see a few more closing just after the first of the year. I bet you will. When it finally hits home, and those who have crunched the numbers and said to themselves, you know, maybe we can make it. Maybe we can make it. And then they realize, after a month or so of doing business, that they're seeing more red than they are black, and it's time just to close the doors. And who benefits from this? Absolutely nobody. The business owner, an entrepreneurial spirit, will most likely find a way to turn his life around, her life around, and find a way to make money. That's what entrepreneurs do. That is the heart and soul of small business in America. Entrepreneurial people who see a potential for serving the public in a way that can make them money. They work out how it's done. They make it happen. They employ people. As they grow, those people they've employed can make more money. They can get benefits like insurance coverage. And the business continues to grow. And as those employees learn how that business operates from working in that business, the wise ones who have an entrepreneurial spirit will also step out to fill a gap on their own. They'll see there's a need for a certain kind of food establishment or sporting goods establishment or something. And they'll take the steps and apply the knowledge they've gained from working in the other business to found their own. And they'll do the same thing. They'll employ other people. Their business will grow. Those employees will begin making more money the longer they stay and the harder they work. And the wise ones who work for them will get the same education and same opportunity. And they'll see a way that they can serve their community. Maybe doing exactly the same thing or they'll find another gap that needs to be filled in the market. And the story continues. But when government steps in and tells these small business owners that they have to pay their employees a certain amount of money, the minimum they can pay them is a certain amount every hour they work. Not because of their expertise, not because of their work ethic, not because they're a benefit to the business and they're helping the business grow, but because a segment of our society who is completely illiterate to the ways that business works in America demands more money for unskilled work because they just want to make more money going to work doing something that they don't care about. And I can say that because I have been the customer served by people who demand $15 an hour and don't care about the job they're doing. And I think you probably have too. So what's absurd about this is that America, governments in states and cities across America, are kneeling before these people making demands and saying, yes, yes, we'll help you. As usual, people in government playing the hero for a group of people who don't need a hero, they need a hard life lesson. And as a result of the government playing the hero, businesses are put in a bad situation. It costs them more to operate. The people that end up suffering are the same people that the government believes or pretends it's helping. Because their hours are cut, they lose their jobs, because the business can't afford any longer to pay them at the higher rate. It's happening across America. We've had story after story coming out of Northern California and on the East Coast as well, where businesses have finally thrown up their hands and said, this is all we can do. We're done. And institutions that have served their communities for decades have finally said, we can't afford to do this anymore. We're having to pay people $15 an hour or $12 an hour or whatever the dollar an hour figure is. We have to pay these people this much money. And these people come in and refuse to learn about what they're doing. They screw the job up on a regular basis. They bring bad service to our customers. They're running people off because all they care about is making that money so they can go out and party and play. Or so they have their living wage and they can come and work a schedule, make some money, go home, and not care about what happens at work. It's happening everywhere. It's happening really in all businesses, not just the restaurant business. Today, if you ask somebody who runs a business what it's like hiring people to work in their business, if they're going to be honest with you, they will probably lower their voice and say, it's really tough. People don't care anymore. The people that we can pay on a starting wage, all they care about is payday. They don't care about doing the job right. The vast majority of them don't. They care about payday. That's all they care about. They call out sick when they're not sick. They don't show up sometimes and don't call. And when they're here, we can't keep them off their cell phones. They're constantly tweeting, constantly texting, constantly on social media. They're looking down at their phones instead of up at their customers. And they're ruining our business. And it's tough because it's hard. It's hard to find good people, and it's even harder to fire bad people. because now you almost have to have a lawyer come into an HR meeting with employees. Because almost anything you say in telling the truth about job performance can be thrown back at you in a court of law. Why? Because government politicians love to play the hero. And they're completely ignorant about how real life works in the business community. And that's dangerously absurd.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
And welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. Thanks for listening wherever that may be or whenever that may be. If you're on Facebook Live, hi, good to have you on board. If you are listening to the podcast, I appreciate it. I don't care when you listen. I just care that you listen. Share it with your friends. Let's grow the family. Speaking of absurd, as usual during the break, I tend to cruise social media and news sites to see what's going on. And you know how if you've been shopping online, what you see in your social media feed is ads for what you've been shopping for, right? Well, I've told you before, my wife and I have been trying to plan a cruise. And it's so as a result, I've been online at the various cruise line sites and at the aggregators, you know, places like cheapcruises.com and the like. And I've been looking at cruises, trying to see what's going to be best here, which one's giving me the most freebies, you know, that kind of thing. For a while, there was one of them that was going to pay for airfare. Woohoo! And then we hit a snag with planning. And we've had to put everything on hold because there's this big unknown in our personal, in our family life. There's a medical situation with someone and we're waiting to hear about something because there's going to be some surgery and we need to know when that is planned and how that's going to pan out before we can actually make any cruise plans. And this is big life-changing surgery too. So we put everything on hold, but still I shop and I get suggestions from people who know, hey, did you see this? Did you see that? And I go look at stuff. So I'm sitting here looking at my news feed on Facebook because I go over to check Facebook to see who's listening. And I look at the feed and, oh, by the way, who's listening? Hi, Brian. Good to have you on board. I get this ad from Cruise Critic, and I've seen their ads in the last few days. And every time I see them, I shake my head because it's like, who can afford to do that? What they're advertising. For example, the one I'm looking at right now, a 63-day South Pacific and Australia circumnavigation collector. It's a 63-day cruise in the South Pacific and Australia. It's 2 months. It's a 2-month cruise. Okay, first off, you have to get there because it's not going to leave from, you know, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This is going to leave from somewhere else. It's going to leave from somewhere in the South Pacific, probably Australia. And then you pay another $7,300 on top of that on top of your airfare for the cruise. $7,300. Oh, it's marked down $500, so it's a real bargain. And the one I saw the other day was a 111-day cruise. 111-day cruise. Let's just live on the cruise ship. You know, let's just retire and take our retirement income, and instead of paying some condo facility or paying for a mortgage or whatever, let's just take that money and throw it at a cruise ship and live on a cruise ship, and about once a week get off and then get back on again and get a new stateroom. Let's just do that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I am seriously considering it. Move forward here. Let's go on. I talked briefly about the House being set to vote impeachment on President Trump. The U.S. House of Representatives is set to make a take a momentous and deeply polarizing vote today when it's likely to impeach President Donald Trump on charges of abusing his office and obstructing a congressional probe. By the way, neither one of those charges is constitutional. Neither one. They're making that up. It's just thin air. The vote in the Democratic-controlled House is expected to fall almost entirely along party lines, underscoring the deep divide in Congress over Trump's conduct and the larger political schism within the nation itself. Trump would become only the third U.S. president to be impeached, an extraordinary check on presidential power spelled out in the U.S. Constitution for executives who commit high crimes and misdemeanors. No president has ever been removed from office under its terms. The vote, expected in the afternoon or early evening today, would result in a trial next month in the U.S. Senate in which House members would act as prosecutors. That chamber is controlled by Republicans, who have shown little interest in removing Trump from office. House Democrats accused Trump of abusing his power by asking Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden, a former U.S. vice president and a leading Democratic contender in the 2020 election. Trump is also accused of obstructing the congressional investigation into the matter. Trump has insisted he has done nothing wrong, and yesterday called the process a total sham. He sent House Speaker Nancy Pelosi a lengthy letter in which he accused her of engaging in a perversion of justice. The president has denounced the probe as an attempted coup and has argued Democrats are trying to undo the results of the 2016 election that saw him defeat Democrat Hillary Clinton. With Trump seeking a second term next year, impeachment has cleaved the public, with most Democratic voters supporting it and most Republicans opposed. What remains unclear is whether the months-long partisan drama will have any effect on the 2020 election, beyond giving Trump reasons to boast of having beaten back Democratic efforts to remove him. Republicans contend that a yay vote on impeachment could cost some moderate House Democrats their seats in next year's congressional elections. Still, several Democrats who represent districts that backed Trump in 2016 have said in recent days they will vote to impeach him. On the eve of the vote, Pelosi sent a letter yesterday to all 232 Democratic members of the House, urging them to abide by the Constitution's standards. I would encourage them to abide by the Constitution's standards, because if they did so, this wouldn't be happening. Quote, very sadly, the facts have made clear that the president abused his power for his own personal political benefit and that he obstructed Congress as he demanded that he is above accountability, above the Constitution, and above the American people, she wrote. She is clearly having third martinis at lunch. Fearful of the political blowback, Democrats were long resistant to an impeachment inquiry, even after Special Counsel Robert Mueller outlined potential episodes of Trump obstructing justice in his report on Russian interference in the 2016 election. But after a whistleblower brought to light a July phone call in which Trump pressed Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to investigate Biden, House Democrats moved swiftly to take testimony from current and former administration officials. Oddly, though, they didn't take testimony from said whistleblower. And that leaves open the question, did that whistleblower actually exist? There are those who are saying, yeah, it's this guy. It's this guy. He was a plant. You see him in these pictures here. That's him there. Okay. Maybe. But really? We don't know, because Adam Schiff wouldn't produce him, wouldn't let anybody talk to him, wouldn't let anybody ask any questions. They also changed the rules for the whistleblower reports conveniently 2 weeks before this happened, so that instead of actually having to have been involved in the event itself, you could just report what you heard about something. You could now enter hearsay and be a whistleblower instead of someone directly affected or involved. Gee, that was convenient. Democrats accused Trump of freezing nearly $400 million in U.S. security aid to Ukraine and offering a possible White House meeting to Zelensky to get him to publicly announce investigations of Biden and his son Hunter, who was on the board of a Ukrainian gas company. The problem with that is that it's all been disproved. All of it has. The first article of impeachment details the Democrats' account of Trump's dealings with Ukraine. The second article accuses Trump of obstruction of Congress by directing administration officials and agencies not to comply with lawful House subpoenas for testimony and documents related to impeachment. welcome to Fantasyland. The Senate has yet to set its procedures for a trial on the charges, which would be overseen by U.S. Chief Justice John Roberts. The chamber's top Republican, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, has rejected Democrat proposals to call further administration officials to testify and has said there is no chance Trump will be removed from office. Yesterday, McConnell said on the Senate floor that it would be senators' role to act as judge and jury in the trial, but he later told reporters that he would not be an impartial juror. Quote, "This is a political process. There is not anything judicial about it. Impeachment is a political decision." Removing Trump from office would require a two-thirds majority of those present and voting in the 100-member chamber, meaning Democrats would have to persuade at least 20 Republicans to join them to end Trump's presidency. And even though there is a cluster of never-Trumper Republicans, there are those who have hated Trump since the day he announced his candidacy. Getting 20 of them on board on the record, knowing it would be political suicide, that's a stretch. Don't see it happening. Today will indeed be an interesting day in America. A day to keep your eyes peeled and to pay attention.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Got to go. But it's the official real version, by the way. This evening has been welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. It is, we're midway through this midweek edition. Wednesday, December 18th, 2019. A week away from Christmas Day. And children everywhere are vibrating. The excitement level has risen to the point of vibration. If you turn everything off and listen very, very closely, you can hear a hum. That's kids everywhere. They're just sitting there slowly, just very quietly vibrating. It's a week away. Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. I'm looking forward to Christmas this year. I really am. We just talked about what's happening today. The U.S. House set to vote to impeach Trump. They're going to do it. There are people who hold out hope that some Democrats will actually see sanity, but I think they've probably been beaten into submission by Nancy Pelosi and her minions, and they're going to, knowing that it's a public vote, that they've been shamed into doing what the majority wants to do instead of actually representing their constituents. You know, the people who voted for them, they're going to do what they're told by Pelosi and the rest. After all, they've been planning to do this since the election, and that's been made plain. Nancy Pelosi herself even said the impeachment's been going on for 2.5 years. She actually out loud in front of God and everybody said that during an interview recently. So this has been the plan since day one. So these people ran for office, these people who are representing Trump-friendly districts, I think they understand the repercussions of their vote. And if they think that they're going to be protected from their constituents by the Democrat Party, they may be mistaken. They may be looking for a job in the very near future. That remains to be seen. But I mentioned this also when we were talking about that previously, that Mitch McConnell has said the Senate is going to dismiss impeachment after the opening statements. In a Senate trial, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that Republicans will seek to dismiss impeachment charges against President Donald Trump immediately after hearing opening statements. Those remarks came from the Senate floor yesterday. As a model for a proposed trial of Trump, the majority leader said that he was using the 1999 Senate trial of President Bill Clinton. McConnell suggested that a motion to dismiss would be put forth by Republicans after opening statements. McConnell said, quote, by any ordinary legal standard, what House Democrats have assembled would appear to be woefully, woefully inadequate to prove what they want to allege. The House should not impeach on this basis in the first place. In the impeachment of President Bill Clinton, it was initiated on October 8, 1998. The House voted to commence impeachment proceedings against Clinton for high crimes and misdemeanors. By the way, there were actually 11 specific charges. There were 11 charges. There were real crimes. The specific charges against Clinton were lying under oath and obstruction of justice. The charges stemmed from a sexual harassment lawsuit filed against Clinton by Paula Jones and from Clinton's own testimony. A trial in the Senate began in January of 1999 with Chief Justice William Rehnquist presiding. However, on February 12th, Clinton was acquitted on both counts, as neither received the necessary two-thirds majority vote of the senators present for conviction and removal from office. In Clinton's Senate trial, 45 senators voted to convict while 55 voted for acquittal on Article 1. On Article 2, 50 senators voted to convict while 50 voted for acquittal. Clinton remained in office for the balance of his second term. Now, in the case of Trump, this is happening during his first term. And the purpose of all of this is to prevent a second term. The Democrat Party knows they have no one who can defeat Trump in the general election in 2020. They know that nobody in the Democrat clown car has a chance of success. They have thrown all of their they've thrown all of their chips in with Joe Biden. And Joe Biden, God love him, bless his heart, can't seem to, one, keep his mouth shut, or two, stop touching people. Remember, I said when he announced that there would be people employed by his campaign whose whole job, the sole responsibilities, would be to keep him on script and to keep him from touching people. At this point, I can't help but wonder how many of those people have either been fired or thrown up their hands and walked away in frustration. Because creepy Uncle Joe keeps opening his pie hole and sticking his feet in. And he keeps hugging people, touching people. And people are kind of wigged out, weirded out by creepy Uncle Joe. But the thing is that he, in all of the polling, is still way ahead. It's interesting. And I think it serves as an illustration to remind us, once again, that polling doesn't reflect public opinion. Polling is designed to influence public opinion. Because if creepy Uncle Joe is that far ahead in the polls, well, doggone it, maybe I should vote for him. All those other people can't be wrong, can they? Well, yes, they can. Have you learned nothing? So, Mitch McConnell has pretty much laid it out there. Yeah, you can bring that to us, but once we get through with the opening arguments, we're all going to go, we're going to go have lunch because we'll be done. So, hey, lunch isn't on me, but you're glad to come with us. That's pretty much the way it's going to go. The Senate is going to dismiss impeachment after the opening statements. So Lindsey Graham was right. In spite of the fact that so many people want so much dirty laundry aired, they want people to come forward. They want certain people to have to testify. They want the public to know what's going on. Well, Mitch McConnell has decided that this is a worthless waste of time. And when you actually look at whether or not the charges coming from the Democrats meet constitutional requirements, you realize they don't. They're desperate. they're trying hard to make something happen that just can't happen. Now, I mentioned that there are some anti-Trump Republicans in the mix as well. Well, there's a prominent bunch of anti-Trump Republicans, never Trumpers, who have launched a new super PAC. Did this yesterday. And their super PAC is aimed at preventing the GOP incumbents' 20th election and even defeating some of the president's top congressional allies at the ballot box next November. The title of an op-ed in the New York Times announcing the launch of the group, called the Lincoln Project, was, "We are Republicans and we want Trump defeated." Wow. The GOP strategist behind the effort said, "Over these next 11 months, our efforts will be dedicated to defeating President Trump and Trumpism at the ballot box and to elect those patriots who will hold the line. We do not undertake this task lightly, nor from ideological preference." The president's reelection campaign quickly fired back, with communications director Tim Murtaugh calling the Lincoln Project a pathetic little club of irrelevant and faux Republicans who are upset that they've lost all of their power and influence inside the Republican Party. I think he's nailed it. The ringleaders of the group, which includes a vocal anti-Trump critic attorney George Conway, yes, the husband of White House counselor Kellyanne Conway, said in their op-ed that they've been broadly conservative in our politics and our outlooks. Our many policy differences with national Democrats remain, but our shared fidelity to the Constitution dictates a common effort. George Conway's partners in the new anti-Trump effort include Steve Schmidt, a Republican strategist who worked for then-President George W. Bush, Senator John McCain and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, GOP strategist John Weaver, who worked for then-President George H.W. Bush, McCain, and Ohio Governor John Kasich. Are you recognizing a pattern among the people that these guys have worked for? Yeah, they're all progressives. And Republican media consultant Rick Wilson, author of Everything Trump Touches Dies, who frequently tears into Trump on Twitter and during cable appearances. Murtaugh, in returning fire, described the super PAC's leaders as establishment charlatans who for years enriched themselves off the backs of the conservative movement where the very swamp he was referring to. Calling any of these people conservative or even referring to them as Republicans at this point is an insult to conservatives and Republicans everywhere. Pointing to a likely record high turnout in the 2020 general election, the Lincoln Project's leaders said that their efforts are aimed at persuading enough disaffected conservatives, Republicans, and Republican-leaning independents in swing states and districts to help ensure a victory in the Electoral College and congressional majorities that don't enable or abet Mr. Trump's violations of the Constitution, even if that means Democratic control of the Senate and an expanded Democratic majority in the House. Let's put the brakes on right there. Let's back up and go over that statement again. He said their efforts are aimed at persuading enough disaffected conservatives, Republicans, and Republican-leaning independents in swing states and districts to help ensure a victory in the Electoral College and congressional majorities that don't enable or abet Mr. Trump's violations of the Constitution, even if that means Democratic control of the Senate and an expanded Democratic majority in the House. These people are willing to surrender control of this country to the very people you're watching right now, the people you watched go after Justice Kavanaugh, the people you have been watching going after Trump, these people who have lied, manipulated, obfuscated, these people represented in large part by the clown car of candidates campaigning right now. They're willing to get these people in positions of power and let them control the country to get rid of Trump, ignoring the fact that if that ever happens, it will never change. All right, everybody, sing along. Come on, you know the words.
It's Christmas at Ground Zero.
That's good. You in the back,
Louder. There's music in the air.
Come on.
The sleigh bells are ringing and the carolers are singing while the air raid sirens blare.
Weird Al, folks.
It's Christmas at Ground Zero.
Merry Christmas. And welcome back to the Daily Perspective. By the way, if you've dropped in on Facebook Live and you're not familiar with the podcast, not familiar with the show, just be aware that if you want to listen to this later today on Facebook Live, you won't be able to. Facebook clamps down on the bumper music. Hey, that's licensed. Do you have permission to... Come on, man. I'm talking over most of it. It's not like you can... You're gonna make a mixtape off of this show. You're just not going to. But Facebook actually will mute sections of this show based on the music I play as bumpers. It happens about once a week. I get a little notification. Part of your program today has been muted. Oh, well, great. Fine. And usually what I do, I'll be just complete and total honesty here, I just delete the whole thing. Because I've got the show. It's a podcast. You want to listen to it again? Go to dailyperspective.com. All the shows are right there. Today's show will be there in about half an hour or so. So you just go there and listen to it. I don't need Facebook for a rerun. I just don't. I do it because there's a handful of people who like to be here, mainly because they used to listen to the radio show, the Mark and Mac Show. And you guys who were Mark and Mac Show fans, I appreciate you very much. Thank you for hanging in there and moving forward and just listening to the podcast. I appreciate that very, very much because, I mean, hey, without you, I'm talking to the dog. Don't get me wrong. I love my dog, but they'll put you in a facility for that. So I just I just want you to know, if you think you're going to listen to this later on today because maybe you missed part of it, you got in late or whatever, I'd be surprised if the whole show is there, especially because of that, the Weird Al thing. I let too much of it run. You're done. That's it. We're pulling the plug on that part of your show. Ah, well, such is life. You know, such is life. I just, you know, that's just it. Okay, back to what we were talking about. This bunch of nuts. Let's see if I can find it here. Is that what I was talking about? Let me scroll back up here. Anti-Trump Republicans. That's the thing. The fact that they are willing to allow manipulation of the Electoral College. The fact that they are willing to allow Democrats to control the Senate again and to gain more control, a larger majority in the House of Representatives. That fact alone, what they're willing to allow to happen, demonstrates their complete disconnect with reality in life in America today. Because when we look around and we see what the Democrats want to do in this country, and we see the corrections that have been made to 8 years of that same plan over the past couple of years, we see the results, the fact that employment numbers are higher, that people are making more money, more people are employed, people are making more money, they're bringing home more because they got a tax cut. And no, it wasn't just for the rich. I'm not rich. I got a tax cut. My wife's not rich. She got a tax cut. We got more money coming in at our house. No, we're not wealthy. If anything, we're barely keeping our noses above water. The thing is, everybody who's working and paying taxes benefited. Now, the liars on the Democrat side will tell you that's not true, but they're liars, so you can't believe them. You can't trust them. Remember what I keep saying, and that is that way back, Barack Obama said that, let me just play it for you here.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
He talked about fundamentally transforming this nation. He is also on record in interviews saying that he has problems with the Constitution, that the Constitution is preventative. It prevents government from doing things instead of granting powers to government to be able to help the people. What he wanted at that point during his campaign, and what he still wants today, is for government to ignore the restrictions of the Constitution and just do whatever it wants, I'm air quoting, for the good of the people. Why? Because Barack Obama and the rest of the Democrat progressives honestly, wholeheartedly believe that they are morally and intellectually superior to everyone who is not a progressive. They are the elite. They're the experts. And as Obama once also said, we are the people we've been waiting for. In other words, it's time. We have finally arrived. We are the ones we've been waiting for. And we are going to make the difference. We're going to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And that transformation would be from a constitutional republic, wisely founded by the men who founded this nation, from that into a progressive socialist nation. They'll call it democratic socialism, the difference being that you get to vote yourself into socialism, the problem being you can't vote yourself out. It's never worked. And I know your liberal friends will tell you that using Venezuela as an illustration doesn't work because that's not real socialism. Well, guess what? The model of Venezuela has been the model of every socialist attempt in history. The people vote themselves into socialism, and when they realize they're getting a raw deal because the politicians who wanted them to have socialism were all lying to them, and they're all power hungry, and they want to be in control, and they believe the people are stupid. When you try to make that change, those politicians eventually call out the military to keep you from making that change. That's happening in Venezuela. That fundamental transformation of the United States of America into some bright and shining socialist utopia is what Barack Obama campaigned on and what he wanted to do. And for 8 years, he ignored the Constitution. He transgressed law. Yeah, he did time and time and time again. He used executive actions to rule over this nation, sidestepping the process set forth by the Constitution. When the press reported on the truth of what he was doing, he actually attacked the press. He actually spied on members of the press. So many people don't want to remember that that actually happened. They talk about President Trump waging a war on the press. What President Trump is doing is just pointing out what the press is actually doing. What Obama did was to ostracize certain members of it. Do you remember what happened with Fox News? And the rest of the press stood up and said, no, you can't do that to them. And they finally acquiesced and said, okay, they can come to the press briefings. That's just one example. 8 years we had of almost a dictatorial rule over this country. And in 2.5 to 3 years, the current president has corrected so much that the country is bouncing back and doing better than it has in a long, long time. And those in power in the darkness of the deep state are scared, witless, that they're going to be exposed for who they really are if it continues. And that may well happen. Stay tuned. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.